Here's Sam Roberta of the Toronto Blue Jays, and you're watching the podcast Walk Off with Scott and Adam.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the Walk Off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one.
So thrilled to have back on the show pitcher for the Toronto Blue Jays organization, ending his season with the High A Vancouver Canadiens, Sam Roberta. Welcome back to the walk-off, man. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you guys for having me. Yeah.
Yeah, buddy. You're in Florida right now.
Exactly. I'm in Florida, Clearwater.
With your girl at your girlfriend's place.
At my girlfriend's house. Yeah, that's correct.
Is this new? Have you picked up a girlfriend here?
No. I've been dating her for like 1.5 years now, a little bit more.
Okay, so since you first came down.
Yeah.
Nice, so, right on.
Yeah.
What are your plans for the off season here? Are you headed back to the Netherlands for the winter, or are you sticking around Florida?
For now, I'm sticking around in Florida and working out of the PDC at the Player Development Complex. So, for how long that goes, then I'll be here, so.
You're in it now, eh, buddy? Well, let's start with this, all right? How was your first full season of professional baseball?
It was cool. It was a fun experience, just a whole lot of new people, players, and yeah, just fun environment to be in for the whole season.
Are you used to the sound of that yet? Sam Roberta, professional baseball player?
It still sounds pretty weird. Sometimes just like it's... doesn't feel real, but it's definitely something cool.
So you started the season in Dunedin, beautiful facilities there, obviously.
Oh yeah.
And you wind up getting promoted to High A, and it's interesting because we followed how you were doing all season long, right? Since we had mm-hmm. you on the show, we kind of been keeping an eye on your numbers there, and from the outside looking in, it seems like you had a really big year developmentally, right? Like you really progressed.
Oh yeah.
Do you feel that way? You do, eh?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, definitely. For sure.
Where do you feel you really improved your game? Or even think?
Yeah, just a lot of things just around baseball. And of course, in the game as well. And just like mechanics-wise, just a lot of like knowledge that I have right now that I didn't have before that I understand better. And just about my pitches, about sequencing, about the little things within the game and like certain situations just came a lot bigger. And yeah, that was one of the things that I developed the most in this year.
How exciting was it when they took you aside and they're like, you know what, we're moving you up to High A?
Yeah, that was exciting. Yeah, wow. For sure. Yeah. Just, I had a little bit of a rough start in Low A, just kind of like figuring it out. And of course, like with a year off of baseball and no, yeah. games, anything like that. It's just a little thing, like a little new. So, but I got through that, made adjustments game by game and figured more things out to work on, and that went better. So, when they told me like, you're starting in High A next week, I was, pumped, of course. Like I wanted to show what I got there. And of course, some rough first couple outings just to get used to it again. But then, from that point on, I started basically doing the same thing I did in the beginning of the season in Low A. And you're just fighting through it. You're just finding ways to get better and figuring things out. And then from that point on, you are more relaxed on the mound. You have more control. You have more control of yourself. And you're able to get through games. And if you give up one or two runs, it is what it is. You're just trying to get through it and put your team in a position to win.
It's kind of just having that mentality and feeling comfortable of baseball is baseball, right? Like obviously there's a major jump in talent from each time you're taking a step up, but finding the confidence and that took you a few starts in High A before you were kind of like, okay, I'm feeling a little bit more comfortable, eh?
Yeah. Also more with like, okay, of course from the windup, I feel the most confident, but that's what I had in the Low A in the beginning of the year too. Out of the stretch, it just feels a little uncomfortable, a little bit like this doesn't really, I don't feel like I have all my pitches or my command or my velocity or anything like that. And then I started to simplify it for myself and yeah, from that point on, it felt more confident. I felt more confident and felt more comfortable to be able to get out of innings. And even with runners on second and third with no outs or base loaded with no outs, you still have that confidence to get out of that. And that was a big thing for me throughout the season.
How excited were your teammates for you when you got the call into the manager's office and they're like, "You're going up"?
Oh yeah, they were happy for me. They were happy for me. Everybody congratulated me, and of course, everyone is trying to get up there, and I want everybody else to move up there too, because it's just fun. It's exciting to get that call, to get that opportunity to go up there. So, I mean, I'll give that to anyone else. So they give that to me too. So that's nice.
What was the first call you made once you got the news? Were you calling your girl? Were you calling your dad? Who were you letting know?
I think I first called my agent, then I let my family know. And then when I got back here, I let my girlfriend know. And yeah, everyone was excited for me to, of course, go a little higher up and a little closer to where I want to be.
Of course. And I know so many of you guys within the organization there, it's been such a weird year because you don't have a home stadium. Like, how weird was it for you to put on a Vancouver Canadiens jersey but then be playing your home games in Oregon? Did it wear on the team at all?
I think it did a little bit, of course. Like, you always want to play in front of your home crowd. And, like, of course, it didn't happen this year. I know some players who played in Vancouver in 2019 really felt that difference, of course. They've been in Vancouver and played in front of those people.
Right. You didn't
and their
know,
fans.
But it was the guys who knew, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, but, like, of course, if you hear those other players talk about it from their experience in 2019, then it's like, yeah, I wish we had that this year too. But so next year, hopefully we can get a big fan base over there and cheering us on.
Oh, I'm with you, buddy. Next year, fingers crossed, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm curious, your catcher, and I mean, obviously your battery mate can make and break a pitcher. Like, it really is a cohesive unit that tends to excel when you're talking baseball. And I'm well aware once you kind of get to pro ball, that all the catchers are pretty elite, you know, but did you connect with any one guy in particular, or were there maybe a couple catchers that caught you this year that you were like, these guys have actually made me a better pitcher?
I think it's more like the communication between the two that makes or breaks a certain relationship. And if you can understand each other, and sometimes it takes a couple outings to like kind of figure out what to do, because I feel the most confident with, if I call a pitch, I feel the most confident with that. And of course, there are always like certain situations where I'm going to be like, I can throw this right now. I feel confident in that. And I can also throw something else in this situation too. And then whenever the catcher puts a finger down, I'm like, okay, yeah, if you have confidence in that, then I'll be confident too and to throw that pitch. So it's a lot of like understanding and talking to each other where like if you're going to be on the same page or not. And that makes or breaks a ball game.
Kind of having the same game plan is pretty darn important, I guess. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it is.
So obviously as a player, you probably try not to put too much energy and time into prospect rankings and where you are on the organizational depth chart. But you recently were ranked by Baseball America as the number 3 prospect or number 13 prospect within the Blue Jays organization, a substantial jump from where you were last year. How do you deal with news like that? Like, do you look at it as a win and validation into the season of hard work that you've put in, or do you ignore that stuff completely and try and focus on the process? Or is there an in-between where you can celebrate your wins but also stay focused on where you're going? How do you, Semro Burst, deal with it?
I think it's nice to get acknowledged and to like, you're putting a lot of work in it and you're working hard for it. So like, and if you put up good numbers and your games are going well and you see that jump, then of course gives you like a little boost of like, okay, I'm being acknowledged and, people notice that I'm working hard and I'm putting up good numbers, but it's not really like a thing to go off of because it's still like, you're not there yet. You're still in the minor leagues. Like, you're still trying to get your way up there. I don't want to be on the top 13, like, a prospect list. Like, I want to be in the major leagues and winning ball games over there. So it's a nice acknowledgement, but it's not really like a really big deal. I mean, I'm not going to put pride on myself and walk around with it that I'm number 13 on the prospect list. It's more of like an acknowledgement, and it's nice that people notice that you're working hard for it. So
I love that mentality of just like, my goal wasn't to be number 13 in the Blue Jays prospect rankings, right? Like,
no.
Yeah, that's great, man. Right on. So like we touched on here, first full season of pro ball. And one thing about professional baseball, affiliate baseball, is the coaching and the insight to the game just tends to be a step up, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm really curious, did you have any mound visits that kind of stand out to you where your pitching coach came out, or even your catcher just managed to like spot something you were doing wrong, mentioned it, and it just fixed it? Or even went the other way completely and came out to the mound and didn't even bring up baseball, almost kind of a trying to focus you through distraction type of thing. Is there a mound visit that stood out to you this year at all?
It's not really for me about the mound visit. It's more like in between innings or right after the game or the day after, where you're like more go over the whole game and how it went. During a mound visit, if I'm completely honest, not really focused on what people are saying to me. I'm just trying to like stay in a moment and kind of like, it's more for me to take a little breather. Okay, like there's a little trouble and there are runners on, so just take that little bit of more rest, and then so I can recover my body real quick and get into the right mindset to go after the other guys I'm going to face. But yeah, after the game or in between innings, sometimes when there are little things like, hey, trying to do too much on this, just, you know, your stuff is good, so like just relax a little bit more and take a step back and just throw that pitch and not try to worry about if it moves more, if it has enough velocity. Just make sure you do your thing and don't try to do too much. Those are always the things that I struggle with the most, just like what I know of myself is like your biggest enemy, kind of like in your head. You can totally like destroy yourself and break yourself down, but you can also pump yourself up and get to where you need to be to get drag out the side or get out of the inning with no runs or something like that. So that's always like a big thing for me.
The mental side of the game, it's so funny. Like your whole life, you grow up and you always hear, oh, it's 90% mental. Everything's 90% mental, right? But was there a moment where it kind of really hit how much mental it is? Like even the fact that the Toronto Blue Jays as an organization has a mental performance department now where they're like literally focused on that side of the game. Was there a moment where you were like, holy crap, this is really, mental is a big part of this?
I had that we were in Palm Beach and I was like not feeling the greatest. Like I had stuffed ears, so I barely hear a lot of things. I was a runny nose and stuff like that. And I knew I had to pitch the next day, and then there was a lot of rain. So I started in the third inning instead of the first inning because they wanted me to pitch and not go into the first, and it started raining and then I have to get banged. And then,
right.
So that was all like stuff that I couldn't control and that came on to the game. And then it doesn't matter what you do before the game. It does not matter whatsoever how your bullpen goes, how your warm-up is. It matters what you have stuff-wise and how you are mentally prepared on the mound in the game. That's all that matters, and that's the biggest thing I noticed. And then I went 5 no-hit innings with 7 or 8 strikeouts or something like that. Like it was something that I just put my mind in the way of, like, nothing mattered what I did before this. It matters right now, and I'm going to go after it with whatever I have at that day and that inning or that particular moment. So, yeah, that was a big, big moment for me.
Kind of eye-opening, eh? To kind of realize, you know what? The pregame stuff is the pregame stuff, and it's not going to determine where you are.
No, exactly. And also, like, how your body feels. Okay, it can be a little achy in some spots, but if your pitches move well, do the good thing, and if your command is still there and you can throw strikes, then it's just sequencing and figuring out hitters and trying to get them out. And it's not thinking about, oh, I'm a little sore in my legs, or my arm's a little sore, or I feel a little stiff, or I don't feel well. Like, it doesn't really matter. If you just focus on what you have to do, then you block it out completely.
I love where we've landed here, this subject we're in, and maybe you can kind of shine a little light on this, because I am curious, how hard is it to get a feel for a pitch? Like, you always hear in baseball time and time again, right? A pitcher's like, oh, I didn't have a feel for my slider. I didn't have a feel for my fastball. When someone talks about not having the feel, what are they talking about? And how often do you not have a feel for a pitch? And when you don't have a feel for a pitch, what is your approach when you go from the bullpen feeling good and then hit the mound and all of a sudden just one pitch isn't working for you? What do you do?
Feel for a pitch is more like, do I have the command I want on it? It's more like, okay, the shape of the pitch is good. I can place wherever I want. I can throw it for a strike. I can throw it out of the zone for a strikeout pitch. That is having like a good feel. Like, you can throw it and it lands wherever you want it to be. And you've had games where like, oh, I don't feel this pitch. And it's kind of like, especially in tough situations where you would want to throw that pitch, but you don't have enough confidence into it to throw it. Then at that point it gets hard. And then you have to always work with your strengths at that point. And if your strength is only one pitch, which I've had, where it's just the fastball, then go after it with a fastball. Put as much conviction into that pitch as you can, and we'll see what happens. I know, like, I'm kind of sketchy about throwing my slider right now because I don't really know what it's going to do. Yeah, then and someone, a hitter, beats you on that, you're going to be even more broken down, because you're going to be like, yeah, I didn't throw my best pitch at that point because I wasn't the most confident in that. And what if I threw my fastball? Like, then you start with those thoughts in your head. So if you always goes for
right,
your best
you're
strength,
questioning every move you did, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And then you're always going to question, like, oh, he hits this, like, now I can't throw that anymore at all. And then you start breaking yourself down into the game even more. And that's not what you want. And whenever I've had games where in my bullpen and the whole week it went well, just every pitch worked and it felt comfortable and confident. And I get on the mound and it's just, for some reason, it just doesn't feel right and it's not there. And then you just have to roll with what you have. You just,
right.
And trying to read swings and see what they do. And if they are late in certain pitches, just try to throw it. And in between innings, I try to get a feel for it just to see, like, okay, maybe I can tweak a little different or put a little bit more extension on it or something like that to try to get that feel back and have a little bit more confidence in it. And that's how you work your way through a game. I mean, it's just battling.
Well, this is where the mental side of things really is so impressive to me, because I can't even imagine how frustrating it must be sometimes to lose a pitch even between innings. Sometimes you see it. A guy's just dealing with his slider in the third, all of a sudden comes out in the fourth, and he's just not hitting the spot that he was hitting every single time before. Like,
yeah. Certain things like that can happen. And then you have to bring back the focus to where your strengths are and what you were able to do in the first three innings of the game, and try to get that back. And if you are in a good spot to try out some other pitches you have but usually don't really throw throughout the game, then try it and see what it does. And maybe it helps you, maybe it doesn't help you, and you know that, and then you have more of a game plan within the game. So, and that will definitely help you throughout the all the innings you need to throw.
I can imagine that this is a scenario we're talking about right here where your catcher actually can make a huge difference, right? Where if he knows you're struggling on a pitch, maybe he's trying to work it through with you or calling a different pitch or just, like you said, going back to what works all the time for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had that sometimes where, like, I don't really throw my changeup to right-handed hitters. I don't know. I just don't have that much confidence in it for some reason. And then I was kind of struggling. It was a pretty long at bat. And then all of a sudden my catcher just calls a changeup. And first I'm like, no changeup to righties. And then he puts it down again. And I'm like,
So well, you the rest it off, and then you put it down again. I love it.
And put it down again, and then just to like mix it up and see what it does. And because I've thrown my curveball, my slider, my fastball, fouled it off, and stuff like that, and just mixing it up, and I throw it, and we get out of it. And certain things like that is really good, and that is what you get from talking to your catchers and throwing bullpens to them, and they understand what the pitch does, what helps, and what your thought process is, also from experience from games before, and then just mixing it in there, knowing like, okay, just mixing it up, and like, yeah, that helps sometimes, and that's really, really good feedback also for yourself within the game. Like, okay, I can throw this pitch too whenever I get in trouble, when I usually don't really throw it. So yeah, that's a really good learning moment.
I know last time we talked, Sam, in the spring, you mentioned mm-hmm. that the pitch you were feeling the best about was your fastball. You had put some yeah. velocity on it from the year before. You were feeling good with it. You had a good feel for it. What pitch were you liking the most come the end of the season? Was it still the fastball? And what pitch was working best for you? And is there a pitch that you put a lot of work into improving that you kind of felt good about by the end?
I start throwing my slider in spring training. And that was kind of like a up-down relationship with it within the beginning of the season, and really trying to work on it, finding a way to make it consistent and make it feel comfortable. And yeah, then I found a way to do that. In the beginning of the year, it was more like fastball, curveball. And then I developed that slider even more, and that felt a lot more comfortable than my curveball, since it was a little slower and my slider was a little faster, and I was able to play it off my fastball a little better. So yeah, by the end of the season, I definitely thought my slider was a good pitch to like get even bad contact or swing some misses. And then my fastball could play off of it if I wanted to like speed some guys up. And when my fastball had enough ride to it, which sometimes I kind of like lose whenever I have a little cut to it. But whenever I have the ride to it, I can get swings and misses with it. And I can always, pretty much locate it where I want to. So I still want to say like my fastball feels the most comfortable, but my slider is definitely second pitch that I can throw for a strike and strikeout pitch in almost any count now. So that feels very comfortable.
It's kind of funny how improving one pitch can make another pitch so much better, like how you were touching on there, that as your slider improved, it did make your fastball a bigger weapon against yeah. the guys you were facing.
Yeah.
Does the curveball and the changeup do the same sort of thing? Like the slider more mimics, or I don't know how your slider is, I haven't seen it, but does your slider more mimic your fastball, or is it like, is what are you throwing when you're trying to completely throw a guy off? Are you going off speed, or are you kind of leaning on that slider more and more?
I think it is more like the sequencing part, like how you set a guy up and how you attack him. I try to like, of course my fastball is straight, and then my slider goes off this plane, and the curveball goes down, and then the changeup goes off this way. So they give kind of like this and then down. So, depends on what the hitter is looking for or what he's swinging at. More like fastball wise, because hitters are always trying to hit the fastball most of the time. And to see like, okay, he's looking for outside fastball. He's looking outside, out over the plate. Then you know, okay, I can get swings and misses with it with a slider if it's a right-handed batter, or a changeup if it's a left-handed batter. So you kind of like work your way around it, how you want to set a guy up and attack a guy. And yeah, when I have my four pitch mix, it's definitely an advantage for me.
Okay, so for the podcast, we have a Discord, it's called. And basically, it's just like a hangout digital for the listeners, where everyone's just chatting Blue Jays and prospects and stuff like that all the time. Mm-hmm. And I mentioned that we were bringing you back on the show here, and we actually had quite a few listener questions for you, which we will get to. But we had like this long thread about the Dutch island of Curaçao. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea how many major league players come from this island. And as this thread got longer, everyone kept bringing up the same sort of question. So maybe you can shine a little enlightenment on for this, us ignorant Canadians, I guess we'll put it. Do players in the Netherlands, like, do they look at Curaçao as counterparts, or is there like a rivalry? Are you playing on the same national team? Are they their own thing? How does that kind of relationship between these, how does it work?
It's not a rivalry. I mean, they're playing on our Dutch national team. It's called Kingdom of the Netherlands. So the kingdom includes Curaçao and Aruba, and I think Sint Maarten is in there too. There are multiple islands that we include in the Dutch national team. So it's for sure not a rivalry. In the WBC, we have a lot of players from Curaçao that play in the big leagues right now, like Kenley Jansen and Andrelton Simmons, Xander Bogaerts, Ozzy Albies, Jerks and Profar, all those players. And they definitely help us get through tournaments like that. We made it to the semifinals in the last WBC. Like, that's a huge accomplishment.
Accomplishment, of course.
Oh yeah. So they definitely help us. So it's really cool to see those players combined with our players from the Netherlands and like working together as a group and making it that far in tournaments like that. So it's a really cool connection.
And some high profile guys too, to kind of look up to and learn from. Very cool.
Oh, 100%. I mean, for players who were ex-professional, who only played in the minor leagues and go back to the Netherlands, who like grew up there, and they're able to play with big leaguers like that, and they can still learn things from them to make to improve their careers within the Dutch national team, and still look up to them and talk to them and like share their lives, like how different it is. And I think that's a really cool cool conversations that go on there in the clubhouse and stuff.
Well, thank you so much for the insight. Now we all know here.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Are there any pitchers that you really enjoy just sitting down and watching? And are there any pitchers that you kind of liken to yourself, or you pay extra attention to because you feel like they pitch like you do?
I do watch a lot of the best pitchers, like right now, like a Gerrit Cole, a Walker Buehler, Jacob deGrom. Like the top pitchers, of course, because they're the best, and they're the best for a reason. So you want to kind of figure out what they do and how they do it. And if I looked a lot at Jacob deGrom, where how he pitches and how he attacks basically every hitter, and it's all he established the glove side of the strike zone for him. And that's how his fastball plays, and his slider plays off of that. And he even throws his changeup in the same plane, and then it dives below the zone, which if everything looks the same and then it dives out, the hitter has no idea and can't pick up anything until like the last 20, 30 feet of the plate, of like the line to the plate. And that's really hard for a hitter to look at and to pick up, especially if you throw 100. That's also a nice advantage you have.
Of course, that's a pretty good one.
And but yeah, if you those are the things that are like, I think that's the biggest thing in getting people out, is making everything look exactly the same out of the hand, and then it goes the way a particular pitch goes. And I think Jacob deGrom does us the best out of anyone in the big leagues right now. So. Some guy I definitely or maybe ever. Yeah. So that's definitely a guy I look at a lot.
I love hearing you talk that. At what point in your career do you feel like you started to get the math behind what guys are doing? And when I say that, I mean like how you just described how Jacob deGrom was using the one corner of the plate and using it his pitches to work off each other. Was there a moment in your own career coming up where you started to watch other pitchers and get what they were doing? It wasn't just, you know, like just watching it as a fan, where it kind of it bled into the fact of like, okay, I'm a player and I get it. Like, I just get the math of what he's doing.
I remember in 2019, I watched a lot of big league pitchers, like really looking at sequencing and really looking at, okay, how does he get certain good hitters out, like a Max Scherzer? How does he get a Miguel Cabrera out, who is like one of the best hitters of our generation? And it's like, okay, like understanding what he does and understanding what a certain hitter looks at and how he goes about his game plan to certain hitters like that. And that's when it really started. And then last year, of course, with a year with no games, I had a lot of time to look at certain stuff like that. And then you're really, instead of playing games and having your own experience, you can look at other players who are the best at what they do and how are they doing it and how are they get to a certain point where they become so good. And that was really last year where I understood a lot more of like sequencing, attacking, and also going a second time and a third time through the lineup, how much that differs or how much that is the same when a hitter expects something different. So
sequencing must have become so much more impressive to you once you kind of figured out like the strategy kind of that's going behind that, you know, like it's one thing as a fan to just sit and watch a changeup and a fastball and be like, wow, those were really well located pitches. But the fact that there's literally so much more that goes into that thought process behind just what pitch you're throwing and where you're putting it, like what came before, what's coming after, just what's in the hitter's head. Like I know.
I mean, on Twitter, you know, you have the pitching ninja, of course, and you have certain pitches that are, if there's a right-handed batter, he swings at a slider that's in the left-hander's batter's box. Like that's a massive distance away from him. And then you have comments. You have comments on that post. They're like, why are you swinging at that? And then he shows that if he locates his fastball right there and he throws his slider off of that pitch, but the slider moves so much that it ends up in the left-hander's batter's box, that a hitter can't pick up on that because it looks the same for such a long period of time where he has to decide whether to swing or not. And if he swings and it freaking moves like 3 feet to the side, then no chance. Yeah, you look like an idiot, but there's no chance of you hitting that. And that's sequencing. That's playing your pitches off of a certain pitch that looks the exact same.
I love those overlays. Like it really for the fan, it just really does open your eyes. It's like, oh my goodness. Like it's literally the same pitch for the first half.
Yeah.
And then it's not at all.
No, like, no, not even close. Or they crisscross. I know like a lot of pitches from Manoah, like when you see his sinker and then his slider, they crisscross. So the sinker comes out this way and then it goes back into the strike zone and his slider starts in the middle and ends up way outside. And it's like, you have to decide as a hitter, am I going to swing or not? But if it looks the exact same or it even crisscrosses, you can look so stupid on a pitch that it's like insane. It's just...
Well, we are talking milliseconds. Like these guys, the fact they're even making a decision as to what pitch they think is actually pretty incredible. Like,
And like, that's what I'm saying is like, when you see those things, like hitting is hard. Like hitting is really, really hard. If you look at those overlays, it's like, how did it even make contact on certain pitches? It's insane.
So you're going into your first true offseason here as a professional. What are some of your goals for this offseason? Do you have something in particular you want to accomplish or something that the Blue Jays coaching staff maybe sat you down and want you working on? What is your goal going into this?
I know there are some tweaks in my mechanics that I think I can improve. I mean, I know my mechanics are pretty efficient. I can just I think personally I can make it a little bit more efficient where I can let it come out of my hand easier and maybe with a little more velocity. Of course, I'm trying to just get stronger like every year because your body's breaking down throughout the end and then you're trying to build it back up and get even stronger than last off season. So those are the two things that I'm trying to work on. And then as soon as spring training hits, of course, start mixing in with pitches and try to see what works and what we need to do to develop certain pitches and make it more consistent, because that's ultimately the goal, is to throw my four pitches for a strike in any count there is. So
awesome. All right, my man. This is what we're going to do now. We're going to throw to your mustache counterpart here, Adam, and he is going to get into foul territory, a little bit of non-baseball questions for you here. So, Adam, mm-hmm. take it away.
All right. Well, first of all, welcome to the Mustache Club. you mentioned at the start of this that you have a girlfriend that you're living with there in Florida.
Yeah.
How does she feel about the mustache?
She likes it at a certain length. It can be too long because then it doesn't look as good. So I need to trim it every once in a while.
All right. That's cool. So how did you and her manage the distance when you moved out west this year? Did she come?
Sorry, what was that?
How did you guys manage the distance in your relationship when you got promoted and moved out west?
Oh, yeah, it was a hard thing, of course, because we just basically started I just moved in with her for like a month, I think, and then I got the call up and went across the States, and it was only for 6 weeks at that point, so it wasn't anything like crazy. She didn't go with me. She stayed here in Florida. Mm-hmm. We stayed on the call, FaceTime and stuff like that. So that's easy nowadays, you know, with FaceTime. So
absolutely. Yeah. Makes dating cheaper anyways, right?
Oh yeah.
I just put on the same Netflix show and count down and okay, we'll both press play at the same time. Is she a baseball fan?
She played softball herself, and she's kind of more into that baseball softball world. So makes it a lot easier to talk to her, and she understands what I'm doing and what I'm talking about. So that's nice.
Very cool. And have you met her family yet?
Yeah, I have.
Reason I'm asking is if they're in Clearwater, they must be Rays fans.
They do watch a lot of Rays baseball. If it's on, they follow it, and they know what's going on. So
so how do they feel about you being with a division rival?
I think they're fine with it.
Maybe they're like most Rays fans and don't actually care about the Rays.
No, they do they do watch the Rays, and they do follow them. They're just happy for me that I had this opportunity, and that I'm able to in a couple years also stand on that mountain at some point, and that they can watch me. So they're really happy.
Very cool. All right, let's get back to the Netherlands for a minute here. What would you say is the food that you miss the most about being at home?
The food I miss the most. It's not that that much different. I think like a big stereotype thing of the Netherlands food is that everything is like mushed. They give mushed potatoes or mashed potatoes and all that stuff. And you can like combine them in the Netherlands. You mash a lot of stuff like together. I don't really miss that. It's not really like my favorite type of food, but
so you're loving the Florida cuisine then, hey?
Oh yeah, I do.
What's your favorite place to eat at in Clearwater? Or is there a particular delicacy that you're like, oh yeah, we need this back in the Netherlands?
I mean, I know like my girlfriend works at a sushi place right now. She's a sushi chef, and that's a really nice restaurant. It's called Seaweed in Largo, and that's a really, really good place. A really good sushi, really good steak, like a lot of really good things. So, that's definitely a place, my favorite place here in Florida.
Nice, right, buddy. Good work. Hook it up with a chef. That's the way to go.
Absolutely. What's the weirdest food that you've come across in Florida? I know, like, okay, so for me, obviously, Scott and I are in Canada, and a cliche of Canadians is that we love our poutine. I went down to Texas one time and saw on the menu there was a Texas version of poutine, but it was poutine with chicken fried steak and white gravy. And I was very curious to try it, but it just felt like too wrong, so I actually chickened out.
Yeah.
But have you come across anything like that where you're like, have you had gator, any food like that?
No, I haven't had anything like that. I know that even though in the Netherlands we like mash a lot of things, mm-hmm. I had never had mashed cauliflower. Okay. And that was kind of like a weird thing for me to like, okay, I've never had mashed cauliflower. And so I don't know the structure of it. It's not really my thing. So I don't know what to think about that.
Fair enough. All right. Coming over to Florida then from the Netherlands, what's been the biggest culture shock for you?
I think everything is done by like a car or driving. There's no like public transport. There is, but there's just not at every corner of the street. There's a bus stop or you can
transport. Yeah,
no, exactly. And in the Netherlands, that's the way to go. That's like how I traveled to school and to baseball games and stuff like that for 5, 6, 7 years. So
that's interesting. I had no idea. Yeah. Of course, the public transit in the Netherlands is going to be better than Florida, where they're like, buy a car or you're walking.
Yeah, if you don't have a car here, it's you're pretty much lost. I mean, where do you want to go without a car? Yeah, you can take the bus, but how convenient is that? So you either have to take an Uber or go on the bike or, yeah.
This is how people
go take a walk.
Water and never leave.
Yeah, they can't go anywhere. You don't have a car.
It's funny when I was down in Texas, I was there for about a month for firefighting academy, and biggest thing that I noticed just speaking of the cars and the transit was in Texas they have like fancy rim rental places, so you can have like fancy $10,000 gold plated spin rims with diamonds on them.
Yeah.
And you can just rent them for like $12 a week. So just all over the place, I was seeing these cars that are maybe worth $500 cash with these like pimped out rims.
Brand, yeah.
Hilarious. So that's funny. All right. So just this morning, I was seeing this video of a guy in Florida who caught an alligator in a garbage can. Of course, we all know Florida man is a big thing in Florida. What's the craziest thing that you've seen from Florida man since you've been there?
I feel like that's a tough question because Florida is known for like crazy
you've just
stuff.
Seen too many crazy things, eh?
Too many things to like think about. I feel like I can't pick one.
We don't have time. Okay.
No, I can't come up with anything right now.
Right. We'll circle back to that next time we have you on. Last couple things here is back to your time playing ball. Do you, on your off days, spend time with your teammates, or do you find that off days were more about yourself and kind of getting away from baseball and just recharging the mental side of things?
I sometimes hang out with teammates on off days. I mean, it's just a friendship and it's just, a fun relationship. And
are you a golfer? I know so many of them golf. Do you golf?
I don't really golf. I like golf though, but it's just something that I do every once in a while. I'm not really like that addicted to it. I do spend a lot of time with like calling my parents or spending time with my girlfriend, just like more like family wise, getting away from baseball a little bit, refresh the mind. And then the next day we go about it again. So it's more like a family thing.
You mentioned calling your parents. What was the time zone difference between Oregon and the Netherlands?
It was 9 hours.
9 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Did you have any specific teammates that you just felt a good connection with that you really hit it off with?
Yeah, there were a couple. I could find with Adam Klovenstein, Gabriel Ponce, Thomas Rui. Those are a couple guys that I come up with right now, and I know there are definitely more. But yeah, with those guys, I can definitely find. And of course, I also spend time with Ponce and with Rui in Lowe. So like we kind of had the same thing happen to us within the same year. So that was really cool.
Awesome. That is kind of cool, eh? When you get called up and then you watch your buddy right behind you get called up. That's cool.
Yeah, I know, like, Ponce got called up a week earlier than I did, and I was happy for him, and I told him, and then a week later I was standing in front of his hotel room.
That's cool.
Knock on his door.
We had kind of a similar experience chatting with Taylor Sacedo and Kirby Snead, who both got promoted to the Blue Jays there this season about a week apart.
Yeah.
They were good buddies too, so it was pretty cool chatting with them and how excited they were. So maybe in a couple of years we'll be having the same experience. But
that'll be awesome.
All right, last one here before we get to the listener questions. I know Scott's got some really good ones for you. Are there any teammates that you've played with so far the Blue Jays fans should get familiar with? Like, have you played with anyone that you care to name who maybe isn't on the Blue Jays fan radar yet, but should be?
Let me think.
I'm really painting you into a corner.
I love this question. You're just like, hey, Sam, here's a bus. Now think quick.
You're going to make one good friend, and you're going to burn a lot of bridges.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're putting me in that situation. No, there are a decent amount of players that aren't really familiar with fans aren't really familiar with them and within the clubhouse and around like outside of baseball, they're really, really good guys, and on the field they kind of like pick the team up.
Let me let you off the hook here, Sam. Instead of that question, just tell me this. Who has been a workhorse that you just have been blown away by their work ethic?
I think if, and I'm not talking about pitchers here, I'm talking about hitters, and it's, I think Zach Cook. You should be getting familiar with Zach Cook.
Okay.
He is a really good teammate and definitely a leader in the clubhouse. Getting people in the right mindset and getting people in all on the same, same team and the same, to get to accomplish the same goal. And he works his ass off himself too. He does whatever he can to get better every day, and that's definitely a guy people should get familiar with.
Awesome. Great answer. Okay, last one. I know I said this, but who's one guy that you don't like? I'm just kidding. Don't ask. All right, Scott, let's throw to you with some listener questions.
All right. So we did touch you did just touch on a little of this, but we'll get into it anyways here. So Shalina from Halifax, so that's Nova Scotia, Eastern Canada, says, hey Sam, curious what you do to chill out when you're not playing baseball. What hobby or thing do you like to do?
Just hanging out with my my family and girlfriend and just watching Netflix shows or just relaxing, just letting my body relax and my mind relax.
Is there a show you've watched recently that you kind of really enjoyed?
I've watched the show Manifest that I thought was really good.
Oh, yeah,
and,
that was good.
Yeah, and I've been watching a lot of Criminal Minds with my girlfriend, so that's definitely a good one that never ends, feels like. Yeah, so
you can watch with the girl, absolutely.
Yeah.
So this next question is from Jamie out of Toronto, and she says, hey Sam, curious what it was like for you moving to the United States from Netherlands. Do you still feel a bit like a fish out of water, or do you feel like you have settled in to the US?
I feel like I've settled in pretty good. I had an accent, like a pretty bad accent when I got here in 2019. But I feel like because I hear English day in, day out, everywhere, anywhere. And so like for me right now, it feels like it's even harder to speak Dutch. I really have to think about like the words and the sentence structure if I'm speaking Dutch than I do in English. So
your brain's fully thinking in English now. That's great, man.
No, yeah.
Well, the advantage that you have of speaking English is that most people who speak English don't speak very good English. So if you get the sentence structure wrong, nobody's going to correct you because you know you messed up.
Some of those Floridians out of the water, Sam. Okay, so your last question here is from David out of Vancouver, and he says, "Hey, Sam, really too bad we didn't get to see you at Nat Bailey Stadium this year. Hope that you start with the Canadians next year and that everybody is back to Vancouver and we get a chance to come check you out. If you had to pick your most exciting moment of this season, what would you say it was?"
I think it was the game at Bradenton that I went 7 innings for the first time in pro ball, and it was not just that, but also that it was televised. So everyone from my family and from my girlfriend's family were able to watch it. So I was able to put up a good performance and a good show on there. Yeah, that was really nice.
And then you won player of the game that year or that day, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very, very cool.
Very cool.
I remember seeing that stat line, being like, nice. Awesome, buddy. Well, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you so much for joining us again, man. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Love chatting ball with you, buddy. All the best over the off season.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! With a drive. Season cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.